FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's the last day of February in 2018. Well, you saw that recent budget. It was chock full of waste, pork, and outsized spending, wasteful spending on items that we certainly don't need. Well, it's really a signal or a symbol of something much deeper, but we'll get into that. Hey, as always, join the conversation, participate in the show, email us at kl@kerrylutz.com. So John Tamney is with us, political economy editor at Forbes, editor of realclearmarkets.com, and a whole bunch of other credentials that I could spend half the interview talking about. But John's been on a number of times before. John, welcome back.
Hey, Kerry, thanks for having me.
As always. So originally I contacted you, I wanted to talk about the budget. This budget was like so wasteful. Nobody seems to care anymore about limited government, controlling government spending. And your take on it is it's just indication that they're getting too much money. However, the government might be getting it because every dollar they get comes from somebody else, a private person, business, who could be much more productive or spend it much more productively than the government can or could.
I think it's got to be remembered. We don't think enough about this, that governments don't tax away our dollars so that they can stare lovingly at them. Every dollar that the government gets gives it more power over the economy, makes it an even bigger bidder for the shoes, socks, T-shirts, buildings, desks, computers, chairs, you name it, that are required to get by in life, to grow an economy. The federal government is a massive bidder of the most crucial resource of all away from the private economy, which is the human resource. The op-ed that you referenced was one in which I talked about how the U.S. Army spent hundreds of millions in bonuses to meet its quota. And it's important because when government gets lots of money, the U.S. economy is naturally weakened by it because it becomes a bidder, again, a size bidder for the resources we need in the private economy to grow.
Exactly. You mentioned to get 80,000 new soldiers, they expanded their sign-up bonuses by hundreds of millions. So it's crowding out. It's the crowding out effect. Every dollar that government spends can't be invested in the private sector where it would yield far more. In fact, basically money goes to the federal government. It does get recirculated or recycled because the government spends it, but their decisions on what to spend it on are often not really what's in the best interest of the U.S. society and return on investment. But they do need something, right? We got to have some kind of government.
Oh, sure. We could get into the philosophy of what kind of government we need. I think the danger with some of the critiques that sometimes we see of budgets, they say, well, look at this funding for, you know, why birds sing at 6 a.m. in the morning. They say, oh, there's waste. Implicit there is that everything else the federal government does is good. I mean, I think I just probably speak broadly for the both of us. In our perfect world, the federal government would shrink back to its constitutionally limited powers, and if so, federal spending would decline remarkably. To be clear, it's not a Democrat or Republican thing. For one, it's a freedom thing. Government can only have resources insofar as what we work for, we have less of. The bigger thing is that it doesn't matter who's in power. When you are allocating resources without market discipline, when there's no failure as part of the equation, naturally you're going to allocate them suboptimally. The beauty of the private sector is that when we misallocate, our bad ideas die, and they die quickly. And that is the source of our prosperity. Government can't cannot do that. Government can't run itself like a business, and it can't precisely because revenues into the federal government are so large, so massive, that they can keep funding what they perceive as their darlings to our economy's detriment and to the detriment of freedom.
Yeah, that is a great point. So really, you know, it goes back to the founding of the nation, even before George Washington was bemoaning military spending, that so much of it's wasteful, that the vendors to the Continental Army were basically ripping off the country, but that he really was powerless to do anything about it because he had to get the stuff. If he was only alive today, could you imagine his eyes when he looked at the military budget? You know, selling goods and services to government is often tantamount to a license to steal.
Well, you make a crucial point, I think, in talking about military spending and talking about that Washington noted back in the 18th century that sales to government were corrupt and wasteful and all that. And that's kind of the point, because, OK, we can at least say, OK, the Constitution's clear that providing for a common defense is one of the roles of the federal government. And that's the idea. It's not that the founders thought that, okay, having a military is going to be squeaky clean. Okay, we get there's going to be waste, and that's the point. Let's limit what the federal government can do to a few things to contain the waste, and let's have most of the waste take place in at the time, the 13 states, and they can fight it out for who's got the best policies. But you hit on something crucial. All federal government is going to be wasteful. All government's going to be wasteful. And so the goal is to make it as local as possible so that people can have choices about this. We shouldn't have such a large federal government. More of the government should be in the cities and states for people to choose.
Yeah, that's really the point, because you have to accept the fact that government is inherently wasteful, inefficient, because government by its very nature cannot and probably should not be ruled by the profit motive, although it often seems like things like speeding tickets, it's more about revenue than it is about public safety. They got the monopoly on issuing speeding tickets. So, but any activity that government engages in is going to be inherently wasteful, corrupt, potentially injurious to public freedoms, to individual freedoms. And therefore, like the founding fathers figured out, we got to limit this beast to only its most essential functions, not anything more. And yet now in 21st century America, we've totally forgotten about their warnings. We've totally ignored them. And that's for a large reason why we find ourselves in the disaster we're in now.
Yeah, I suppose the one thing that where I'd quibble is I don't think it's a disaster as much as, and let me be clear, a $4 trillion government is a major disaster. Because consider the unseen. Consider how much richer, how much more advanced, how much healthier, how much more employed of a country we would be absent this massive government. The scary thing, however, is that Americans are so productive that they can actually avoid the disaster. As in, we're so productive here that to the naked eye, it doesn't seem very disastrous, but that's the seen. The unseen is how much more advanced we would be. The reality is that investors are dying to lend to the United States. The U.S. is backed by the most productive people on earth. And so that what we've got to remind people is not, oh, we've got to cut spending because we're in big trouble. We've got to cut spending because we want to progress at a level that would make the present, which is the envy of the world, but it'd make the present seem endlessly slow by comparison.
Yeah, and that is the point. Imagine where we'd be if we didn't have this huge, you know, government doing all sorts of wasteful things. I mean, it's not far-fetched to think they're wasting half of that $4 trillion, maybe not so much on Social Security. That seems to be less prone to fraud, but certainly disability insurance fraud, which is part of Social Security, is rampant. And yeah, so it's lost opportunity. It's the opportunity cost that really is killing us here.
Mm-hmm. You know, look at even Social Security. Where in the Constitution does it say that the federal government must provide for, retirement? And let's also add that there's nothing in the Constitution about growth. I mean, I think the founders realized that free people would prosper just fine, but it's not the federal government's job to provide things. And so you think about something like Social Security. If there weren't, and let's be fair, most Americans provide on their own for their retirement because they don't expect a check from the government to be very robust. But think about that 6.2% of our paycheck, and then the people who pay us pay the other 6.2%. That could be going into regular savings that would provide a huge source of capital for businesses. Instead, it just goes into U.S. Treasuries. Think about the growth we're losing even there. It's just, it's just shameful.
I didn't mean to say I felt like it was a worthy program. I mean, it all sounds worthy, but we're effective. But the fact is, as far as a program that's fraud ridden, like, say, food stamps. Well, I mean, you just name the program. It's riddled with fraud. Social Security, other than paying for people who have already died, that seems to be the biggest kind of fraud. Whereas like food stamps, there was just, I don't know if you caught that article. They said there's 35 or 38,000 grocery stores across America who are ripping off the food stamp program. And, you know, who's surprised by it? You can't really be surprised, right?
No.
It's expected.
And it wouldn't matter who is running it. It's inevitable. I mean, we've just got to remember, this is not a Republican or Democrat thing. When the federal government gets revenues, those revenues will be spent. And that's actually one reason after having bashed to use Social Security, that's one major reason that I am against entitlement reform. Let me explain. Assuming we did reform entitlements, which, let's face it, they're never going to do it. These clowns would never do something like that. They're just not going to risk the politics of it. Okay, but assuming they did, implicit there is that suddenly there would be all these revenues flowing into Washington that wouldn't have a purpose. And so we know what Congress would do in that scenario. It's not like, oh, the money would be given back to us or, oh, I don't know, tax rebates, you name it. They would just find new things to spend it on. So I would much rather at this point, Social Security is an idiotic program. All of these are idiotic. But as much as possible, if they can engulf much of the budget, that makes it more difficult for these clowns to find new things, new entitlements that will grow and grow to invent.
Yeah, that's a great point. And hey, so I think we beat that horse pretty dead, and I agree with you. So when we're looking at what's happening with the internet, which has really been an incredible creator of wealth, as well as all the other benefits, which I don't have to run down, but I think uplifting the human state of knowledge, the ability to find information on any topic. I think we've got a problem, though, and I'm not sure if it's one that the private sector is capable of curing. And that is that entities like Google, Facebook, Microsoft, large, even Apple, have kind of allied themselves with the left. And now what we see here in YouTube is they're purging out hundreds, maybe thousands of conservative commentators, especially ones who are speaking out about Russiagate and about various topics that they just say is rumor mongering, whatever. Can the free market really cure this problem? Or is this a case where we do need the government to help us?
Always the free market. Let's never forget one crucial thing, that when the 21st century dawned, Apple was just emerging from near bankruptcy. Microsoft had just been ripped apart by the federal government in the sense that it wasted years and years defending its ability to give customers what they want. So Microsoft was on the verge of 14 years where its stock basically flatlined. Amazon was on the verge of declining to near penny stock status. Google was a private company relying on word of mouth, and Facebook didn't exist because Mark Zuckerberg was in high school. Fast forward to the present, those are the five most valuable companies in the world. What was the most valuable back in the year 2000? Certainly the most powerful was GE. It's dying before our eyes today. Some of the most powerful media entities back then, LA Times, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, just about every single one of those has been bailed out by a billionaire. in the years hence. If you fast forward to 2006, at that point, MySpace got more visitors than did Google today. Have you heard of MySpace in modern times? Markets
my what?
Solve this all the time.
Yeah. My what? MySpace. My kids probably barely know what that is. Right.
Yeah. And it's just a reminder that precisely because there's so much wealth, you said it in your introduction of it, the internet has been a massive wealth creator. Well, precisely because there is dominance in this space is naturally going to be ephemeral. Invariably, Bill Gates, Microsoft was seen as the impregnable power. But then Bill Gates slow-footed the internet, slow-footed search, slow-footed social media. There will be, in the case of MySpace, it had the backing of a billionaire in Rupert Murdoch. And then some kid in a dorm room at Harvard knocks it off the map. Rest assured that when we're talking 10, 15 years from now, these companies that are the five most valuable in the world will not be that way anymore. And that will signal rising prosperity in the United States. Your stay at the top is rarely long in this country.
Yeah.
That's why we're so rich.
Yeah. When you look at the Forbes 400, every year there's churn. And when you go back 10, 20 years, most of the names that were on that list aren't there anymore, right?
Yep, absolutely. It's very few. Isn't it interesting that with the death of David Rockefeller in the past year, there are no longer any Rockefellers on the Forbes 400. Now, if you had told someone that in 1918, there would come a day where there wasn't a Rockefeller among the 400 richest Americans, they would have laughed you out of the room. But that is the way a dynamic economy works. It's the creation of wealth that ensures that those at the top will be knocked off of their perches at the top, because it's the wealth itself that frees up capital for new ideas that replace the existing and very successful ones.
Yeah, what do they say? From riches to rags in three quick generations, right?
Yeah. Well, there's that, but it's also people just get better and better. What I would prefer to say here, given this in the United States, is that we stand on the shoulders of giants. And so what Jeff Bezos will achieve and what he's achieving, someone can then expand on what he's done in a way that knocks him off of his perch. Let's not forget that it wasn't long ago that people were throwing away Sears catalogs because Sears was knocking out local retailers. It was too powerful. It was serving the needs of too many people. It was a predatory retailer. What do you know about Sears today? Rest assured, they're already saying it about Amazon. Someday we will be talking about Amazon in this way too, probably in our lifetimes, given the dynamic, speedy nature of capitalism.
Hey, that is a great point about, I would call it the collective knowledge database. And if you look at something like air travel by commercial jets, I mean, it keeps getting safer and safer. And a large measure of that is due to the knowledge database, both of pilots and the companies themselves, that they can keep tweaking and keep improving. Now, forget about customer service. We're not talking about that. Thank goodness. They forgot all about that equation. But I'd rather get there safely than be there in total luxury and not get there at all. But it's this knowledge database that enables others to, like you say, stand on the shoulders of giants and attain ever greater accomplishments and achievements. And that's why, getting back to where we started, that's why the freedom, individual freedom, the sovereignty of the individual over the government is really crucial to keep that going.
Absolutely. Let's never forget that an economy is just individuals. And that's why I go nuts when people try to measure the economy with GDP, or they say the economy's hitting a speed limit, or the Fed can come in and bolster the economy. Oh, really? How? An economy is just a collection of individuals. The only way to bolster it is to remove the barriers to individual achievement. A growing economy is one defined by ever rising inequality, because free people are able to realize their potential and they're able to pursue that which makes them individually great. The path to what we want is less government. It's a lack of policy that frees people up to do that which makes them individually special.
That is a great point, and I'm totally with you there. I mean, it really is about people and people pursuing their own interests, their own economic ends, not at the expense or at the sacrifice of others, you know, obeying the golden rule, as it were. And until we get back to that and really understand that that is where the fountain that all wealth springs from, I guess we're going to keep having these discussions, John. Hey, John, where's the best place to find you? I know Forbes, obviously. I read your work there all the time. Any other places we connect with you?
Yeah, you can find me at Forbes.com. You can find me at RealClearMarkets.com. You can find me at FreedomWorks.org. But I'm all over the place. And I usually put out three columns per week. And my next book comes out in May. It's titled The End of Work. So there's lots of ways to reach me.
Hey, and if we had more time, just one quick question. The tax bill, all right? Let's not say whether it's good or bad, could have been better. You know, politics is the art of the possible. So they say, net plus or minus for the economy?
Maybe a slight net plus. I'm one of these people that thinks it's vastly overrated, that it's too much of a tax increase on a lot of productive people. But I hope to be proven wrong.
Yeah, especially in the blue states, in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, California, Illinois, where you're already paying heavy property taxes and state income taxes. And local,
yes,
through the wazoo. But let's see what happens. So far, interesting outcomes that weren't expected. You know, the bonuses to employees, higher spending here at home. Let's hope that it works. All right, John. Hey, by the way, if you got a question for John or myself, we invite you to be part of the show. Just send us an email to kl@carrielutz.com. Use the Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. John, as always, thank you so much. It's great to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.